Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I know a policeman helps people, Mom, said 4-year-old Roy, but what does he help them do? How can we help our children to have the confidence, self-esteem, and information to make smart choices in emergency situations? Today, we're going to continue our discussion with two experts in the field. I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests will help us prepare our children to cope with emergencies. Chief Richard Long is the District Chief of the Montgomery County, Maryland Department of Fire and Rescue Services. He has 2 grown sons. Welcome, Chief Long.
Thank you for having me.
Officer Hugh Packard is School Safety Coordinator for the Bethesda District of the Montgomery County Police Department. He is the father of 2 daughters, 1 in high school and 1 a college freshman. We're glad to have you with us again, Officer Packard.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
There's an issue right now with my 12-year-old's friends that they want to go to the movies together. And there's been a lot of talk among the parents about, is it appropriate to drop them off at a movie theater during the day and let 2 or 3 or 4 of them go into a movie theater together, or is that trouble also?
That, once again, you know where they're going to be. Nowadays, you have to watch out what kind of movie they're going to watch.
We were thinking about other people that might be in the theater. We always tell them, don't go to the bathroom by yourself,
right.
That kind of stuff.
Any play time or free time, there's always a little bit of safety in numbers. The case we discussed is one of the very few cases where there was a double abduction. The kind of people that do that are very good at targeting people that are low self-esteem, that are loners, that, you know, just seem to be wandering about looking for something. And the people that approach them, it's not usually a violent physical attack where they're grabbed and abducted. More often than not, it's just, hi, how you doing? And a talk, you want a pizza, a soda? And it's very non-threatening initially, and yet that kind of person would be extremely dangerous. And like I say, most of the time when you run into molestation-type situations, it's not where somebody's just grabbed off the street. More often, it's a process that may take a little bit of time, but it's a talk process more than anything else.
Should parents role play things like that with their children, or is that too scary?
It can be done, and you can graduate it from age to age. You know, my kids obviously have been in a law enforcement family forever, and yet my youngest would go up and just nonchalantly talk to strangers at the 7-Eleven. You go in to get a gallon of milk and come out, and she's all of a sudden made a new friend. And, you know, you have to make it clear that that's inappropriate behavior. Kids are amazing. And, you know, I said that you may have 2 10-year-olds that are light years apart. Well, siblings are the same way. You just don't know, and you have to find out. If you show them things, if you say, gee, what do you think about that guy? And here's a guy with a mohawk and 17 earrings and all that sort of thing. And instead of saying, you know, oh, he looks disgusting, ask them what they think before you give an opinion. And if you've done your job correctly up until then, say, he looks kind of weird, you know, whatever they're. And then you won't have to worry about them. And then as far as that type of individual. But talking with strangers, who they trust, you have to keep a tight rein on that.
What about if a child feels that he's being followed? What kinds of advice would you give to children?
Once again, the circumstance, if they're on the way home, if you're one of those people that it's in proximity to walking distance to an elementary school or daycare or whatever, they should know, or you should try and establish a safe house in between. You're in your own neighborhood. Well, so-and-so is retired. They're home all the time. I've known them for years. If you ever have a problem between here and the school, that's a safe place to go. And that can be established. I work with safety patrols, and we had an incident here locally where a safety patrol was one of her friends came up to her stop and fell down. The patrol went over to help, and this an individual was watching them in a car and pulled over across the street right next to him. The guy exposed himself. And you have to make kids aware of situations and parents aware of situations without scaring them to death. And everybody wants to say, well, my kid can't be a patrol. Well, you know, there's a safety issue. We need them. Let's try and pair them up. Your post should be in your own neighborhood. Where would you go if you had a problem while you were at your post? You get off at the bus. The bus stop should be close to your house. Where would you go? And that can be established ahead of time so the kid knows where to go. Rote teaching is the best way to work with that sort of thing.
Officer Packer, what are some general environmental hazards for children to be wary of?
Right now in the home, obviously, firearms is a big issue. I do a lot of group tours into the station, and I always ask the kids raise their hand if they know if there's a firearm in the house, handgun, rifle, or a shotgun. And ordinarily, you'll see some kids are scared to put their hand up because they think it's bad or something like that. And I try and keep it nonspecific as far as right to bear arms and for or against it. But the bottom line is, in the metropolitan area, 50% of the households have firearms in them, and a lot of the kids don't know that. Now, you could go out in more rural areas, and a 12, 13-year-old may be an expert marksman, may hunt, may fish, and they've been raised with firearms all their life. They know what they're capable of doing. Those kind of kids we don't worry about. But the people that have firearms in their house for one reason or another, it's a three-step process. If you go in to use mom and dad's phone and the drawer's open, you see a firearm, what's the first thing you do? Don't touch it. What's the second thing you do? Get away from it. What's the third thing you do? Tell an adult. And keep it as simple as possible. I even take it further and tell the adult that's a terrible place to keep a firearm. You wake up in the middle of the night, you hear a sound and reach over, and all of a sudden we have a tragedy. That's the obvious thing. I have a wood shop in my garage. There are 100 different things in there that you could severely injure yourself with. If you have power tools, most of them have some sort of safety switch that can be taken out of the tool itself. A lot of circumstances, it's a real good idea. Keep those in a secure spot. I can turn the power off with a circuit breaker type situation, so there's no power that can go into any of these tools. Those kind of things. You can go under anybody's sink or in anybody's closet, and you can find chemicals. You can make bombs with them. You can inhale them. All sorts of disasters, and you mix them with heat, boom. That's the kind of thing you have to watch out for. And you always find the Ipipac syrup. I'm very familiar with on a firsthand basis because, my kids did the same thing. The other thing you have to worry about, too, is when you go somewhere else. My mother's still alive and well, and one of my daughters decided that medicine that was on the bedside table, she was going to mix and match and just started popping pills. Because you can say now, do you want childproof caps or not? Well, an 80-year-old woman, a childproof cap, a lot of them can't open them. So those are the kind of things. When you go somewhere else in somebody else's house, is that house set up the same way as yours? If you're used to being a parent, you put stuff away. If you're a grandparent and you're visiting them, then the situation may be totally different.
What about things like power lines or ice on ponds or that kind of stuff?
There are obviously hazards, and sometimes they pop up when you don't even realize them. We had an incident where a school bus was involved in an accident, and the bus ran off the road, and the front end was in a line of pine trees. And we didn't find out until the next day that right in the pine trees just above the bus was a power line. Had the bus gone a little further and hit one of the trees, we would have had, a down line right there, and it was right at the door. And that could have been a scary situation. But you have to know your neighborhood. And that's one thing. Find out, if you live in a community, where's the park? Where do you take your kids? And then walk around that park. What's there? My old neighborhood, we used to walk by the tennis courts and up to the park until I took a good look at the tennis courts and even found syringes one day and beer bottles and all sorts of stuff. So you have to know, is that place safe for my kids right now? Am I going to be able to let my kids go to and from that location? And another thing, and I'm sure our emergency medical person will back it up, I don't know how many times I've been in a park situation and you see kids, they take a fall. And, maybe mom wasn't paying as much attention as she should have been. She might be socializing. But the first thing that any parent does, and I hate to be gender biased, but the first thing a mom does is go running over and scrape the kid up and give him a big hug. And if you've had any sort of, neck, back, or any break at all, you really could be making a bad situation much worse. Is the play equipment safe? Take a look at it. They use pressure-treated wood for a lot of these things now. If it's real old and been around for a long time, you're going to find some horrendous splinters. You know, is it maintained well? Does it come down into gravel, dirt, or wood chips? There are a lot of things you can do to kind of pre-scout, where your kids are going. My kids have always been involved in sports. We have a lot of parents that say, all right, I send my kid to school, I send him to church, and they play sports. What happened? Why are they bad? Why are they out of control? Well, it's all fine and dandy having them be involved, but get involved with them. It's a must. It's an absolute must. And unfortunately, you can get into some situations where you talk about strangers, you find people that are in trust situations that may be a police officer, it may be a priest, it may be a Boy Scout leader. Find out who these people are. A true pedophile will go into that organization just to get access to kids. And you have to watch. If you looked into our youth division files and saw some of the things that parents let their kids do. Yeah, the nice old man down the street's going to Ocean City for the weekend, and can my 14-year-old go with him? No, thank you.
Do you know the nice old man?
No. That's if it's something above and beyond what you would do for your own child, you really have to question the motive for somebody doing that. And kids get put in risky situations that really shouldn't happen.
And also, it sounds like parents should really try to volunteer in the activities that their children are involved in.
Certainly. Any activity at all. I've done a lot of coaching over the years. My kids started out in dance, and I hated dance, but boy, it...
daughters.
Oh, yeah. But I grew to enjoy it, and it really helped them out. And it was something that it's good exercise. They meet other kids, and there's direction to it. And I had no clue what they were doing. All I could do is sit there and watch and say, how are these people doing that? But yeah, get involved. Stay involved.
Sandy and I have that as sort of a theme song. Chief Long, what are some symptoms of poisoning? Could we talk about that a little more?
Unfortunately, there's not one set of signs and symptoms that you could say, this means it's a poisoning. There's things, if a child were to ingest cleaners, there may be some burns around the mouth. There could be the child could be unconscious or they could be having trouble breathing. More important, I think, is to look at what's going on in the environment. In other words, if the child's acting unusual, or they're having a problem, they're having vomiting, they're having diarrhea, and it's all of a sudden. In other words, this is a very sudden type of onset. What's going on? Where have they been? You have to look at a lot of things. There's so many variables that it's hard to pin down. Have they been underneath the sink, and are there cleaners underneath there? Have they been into the medicine cabinet? Kids love to go exploring, so medications are a big problem. The simple pantry. If you go in and if you really want to look, there's a lot of scary things in there if you're a child. There are things like orange and vanilla extract, which we use in cooking every day. They are, and I don't remember the exact percentages, but go home and look in your cabinets
alcohol
and
content.
See how much alcohol is in that. I think orange extract is close to 50% alcohol. And I know vanilla is very high up there, much higher than beers or wines.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh,
if they consume a bottle of that, you actually have and alcohol poisoning on your hands. So there's other things. I'm not sure the exact numbers, but I think of plants. There's something like 50 different variety of plants that are poisonous that you have to be careful of if children start chewing on the leaves or the blossoms. So there's so many things out there. It's hard to say what is going to be in a poisoning, or is there a certain set of signs and symptoms? Again, look at the child. If something's unusual, why is this child acting like this? And look around, investigate the environment.
It might be a reaction then that's somewhat delayed.
It could very well be delayed. Yeah. There are vitamins. Let's take vitamins, for example. That's a great one. People buy the vitamins that are fortified with iron, and we pop those every day. Children who have an iron overdose will usually have delayed response, and they end up with vomiting, diarrhea, and bloody stools. And, if you weren't aware that the child had taken these vitamins, and we're not talking about a lot. Because the amount of iron that's in these tablets is more than a child should have. So this is something that may show up the next day, 24 hours later.
Now, if a child is alone with another child and suspects that the other child has taken something that he shouldn't have, what should the child do?
definitely they should be calling 911. They should get the emergency response. Like I said, we'd much rather get there. The responders will usually take over, and they will look for things like, are there bottles that are open? They will contact the local poison control center. And, of course, they're going to try to contact the parents.
What do you think of those Mr. Yuck stickers?
Mr. Yuck stickers are great if you use it as a conditioning. In other words, you need to start off with the kids and say, this means it's bad. You're not going to use this. You're not going to take this. Just sticking it on a bottle means nothing to a child.
It's pretty. It's cute. It's funny.
It's nice and green. And it's got a funny-looking little face on it. But they have to realize that means it's bad. Do not take. Do not touch.
Is there an issue if there's a child at home and either an older child who's not a grown-up or a babysitter about legally being able to take a child to a hospital?
The problem is that until the age of 18, the child cannot give consent. So if you have a babysitter that's 13, 14, well, even the babysitter, even an adult babysitter would not be able to give consent. So if you have a child that's fallen and broken an arm, the rescue squad will come and they will be able to take the child to the hospital. And it's something called implied consent, and we really don't have time to get into that. But what the hospital would have to do is they would have to track down the parents. And this goes back to that list of phone numbers. So the babysitter or the other child should have a listing of mom's phone number, mom's car phone number, her pager number, dad's numbers. They need to be able to get a hold of them so they can give permission.
It's interesting. My sister-in-law, whose children are a lot younger than mine, has not only a car phone, which, of course, I didn't have when my children were little, but she has a pager.
Yes.
Because she says there are times when she is just not reachable any other way, and she wants to know that her children's schools can reach her.
It's a very good idea because, unfortunately, if it was a life-threatening emergency, the hospital does have the ability to step in and start treatment.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't want to think of our child laying on a hospital bed with a broken arm, being in pain, having to wait for several hours while they try to track us down at the mall.
So, in other words, if there's a poisoning situation, a hospital could go ahead and take care of the child.
Yes. If they feel that it's life-threatening, they can go ahead and they can start the aid that needs to be given.
For overnight-type situations, you can get pre-approved consent forms for kids. Anytime your kids go to camp or if you're going out of town for a weekend and, you know, an extended period of time and you're going to be way out of town and you're hiking the Appalachian Trail, it might be a good idea to have a pre-approved consent form. I consent for my child to receive the appropriate medical. And if you leave it open-ended like that, if you say appropriate treatment instead of a specific treatment, then it can work a lot better.
We used to get those forms from a local hospital when my children were little. Is that the standard place or the police department? Or
the only reason that I know a lot about that is we sponsor a patrol camp and we take 10-year-olds and, you know, that's an hour and a half, two-hour drive. So we have, you know, pre-approval medical treatment forms that
sure.
We can do that sort of stuff.
These do not have to be notarized or anything for a hospital to be able to use them?
I don't believe so.
I believe that they're able to accept it without the notarization, yes.
Officer Packard, how do you feel about self-defense classes for children?
I'm not a big self-defense expert. I don't think it's a real good idea. The thing that you always hear in the commercials is kids get self-confidence and all that sort of thing. And that's all fine and dandy, but if you're a 130-pound 12-year-old and you're overconfident to your abilities to protect yourself, that could get you into more trouble than for most kids in any dangerous situation. Flight is the best maneuver. Get away from it as fast as you can. Go get help. But to expect a kid to be able to defend themselves against one or more adult attackers, you would really have to be some sort of martial arts expert. And even though you see kids that are, you know, 4 foot tall and they have black belts and all that sort of thing, I really don't think that that would be an appropriate thing to where a kid could really defend themselves.
There are things like Safe Kids programs and stuff, and it tells kids what to do if they're attacked, put their fingers in their attacker's eye, or I can't remember all these other things. Are those effective?
For the most part, you have to understand, is that person capable of doing it? It's like I get a lot of phone calls that, well, my neighbor's house got robbed and I'm going to get a gun. Do you like to shoot? No. Are you ready to kill somebody? Well, no. Then don't get a gun because somebody's going to wind up using it on you. And the same type of thing, if you have an individual, a child who is an aggressive personality, is physically capable of that sort of thing, it might work. But there again, if in most situations, unless there's absolutely no other way out, the first thing I always taught my kids and would teach anybody's kids, try and avoid the situation in the first place. Because there are always things, there are signs that you need to look for and understand that I'm getting into a closed situation with somebody I don't know. This should start sending off alarm bells and get away from that before it turns sour. If it does turn sour, the first opportunity to flee the situation is probably 99% of the time the best remedy. There are 100 different ways to poke an eyes out, you know, groin kicks, whatever, but you really have to be capable of doing that. Most people, it's not in their person to deliberately hurt someone. And unless you're prepared to do that, you're better off running than trying to do some sort of defensive technique.
Although someone recently said that they teach kids to yell fire if there's a problem because then people pay attention rather than help
well,
or something.
We always used to tell kids in a situation where if somebody grabs you, sit down and scream out, and it was almost scripted, I don't know you. You're not my daddy. Mm-hmm. And that's fine and dandy, but how many kids remember that?
That's right.
But if they start screaming bloody murder, you know, that is a good technique, you know, because somebody, you may be in a subway or wherever, and somebody might have enough, you know, concern to get up and find out what's going on. You know, we all hear about the apathy and everything like that, but we like to think that there's somebody around that'll stand up and help. But the worst thing a kid can do is just sort of, and it's a natural instinct to kind of cave in as opposed to screaming out for help.
What would you say childproofing a home really means?
There's no way to childproof a home. You can make it a little safer to be in, and there's a lot of resources that you can use, especially if you have access to the Internet. The National Safety Council has a website, and I guess really to look at a few things. First thing is that you need to turn your hot water heater down. Too many people have them set up 140, 150 degrees. They're recommending about 120 degrees so that there is not the possibility of scalds for children, especially if they're in the bathtub. They're getting to that age where they want to be by themselves a little bit and they want to kind of get a little bit warmer. There's also devices on the market. You can check with a local plumber, anti-scald devices. They're not that expensive. There's other things in the home that you need to look at, garage door openers. If you've gotten a garage door opener in the last several years, most of them are built with new devices, electric eyes to keep them from coming down if something's in the path. They have pressure sensors so that it can't crush a child if they were underneath. But if your garage door opener's been there for 20 years, it may not have those. Some of the other things, water. When you start talking about toddlers, we know we shouldn't leave children in the bathtubs by themselves. But the other things are children should be left around any water, especially toddlers. One of the biggest problems that they run in nationwide is buckets. Somebody goes out to wash the car, the child comes out, reaches into the bucket, and because with children, their anatomy is different, their head is much heavier, they will fall into the bucket and can't get themselves back out. Electrical sockets. You need to look at the electrical sockets around your house, especially with toddlers. You need to close those up. In other words, there's plugs that can be put in those. There's covers that can be bought that will make those safe. You know, children don't handle electricity as well as adults do. Screens. We're coming into our warm weather season here, and one of the saddest things is that every spring we have numerous cases where small children, toddlers, will go up against screens because it's the first warm day of spring, somebody opens the window. And if you look at a screen, it's only held in with a piece of rubber mesh. It has two little pins that stick into the side of the window. Very little pressure will pop at that screen. If the child's on the second, third, fourth floor of an apartment building, or even upstairs in a townhouse, it's very possible that they could fall through the screen. You know, keep the windows closed. If you have to open the windows, please make sure there's no furniture near the window that the child can climb up, or a toy box, or a small chair. That's one of the biggest things that we see each time this year.
There are devices, aren't there, where you can open the window a certain way?
Certain amount,
and
it will
keep
it much
there.
Smaller than the child's size, so they can't
right.
get through it, yes.
Yeah. We'd like to thank both of our guests, Chief Richard Long and Officer Hugh Packard, for again helping us to figure out ways that we can make our children make much smarter decisions in emergencies. Thanks for giving us such helpful advice. For our listeners' poll question, coming up next, please call our toll-free number, 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573, and give us your response to the following question. What do you find hardest about raising children? We'd like to use some of your comments on the air, but if you'd prefer, you need not leave your name or phone number. We're eager to hear from you.
If you have other comments, questions, or suggestions for Parents Perspective, you can use the toll-free number 1-800-791-8573 or email us at parentsper@aol.com or contact us care of this station. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.